This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Chris Collinsworth, who I think does a good job on the Sunday night games on NBC. I know there's people have their feelings on Chris Collinsworth. I like him. I think he does a good job.
I used to despise him, and then somewhere along the way, about 10 years ago, he kind of stopped being so... I guess, is smarmy the word? I don't know. He just changed a little bit. He seemed like he's just more like a normal dude, and I like him a lot now.
You like him, so he gets the Seth Payne stamp of approval. Here is Chris Collinsworth. He was on the Peter King podcast. They actually both work for NBC. And he was asked, look, if you're an NFL team that's looking to hire a head coach, who among the candidates that are out there would you choose?
If you're a general manager of a moribund team and your owner says to you at the end of this year, well, I want you to survey the field right now, and I want you to pick the coach that's going to turn us around. Who's the assistant coach in the NFL or college quarterback right now who you would go hard after because you really believe in him?
Eric Bieniemy. I would have done it last year. Everybody, you know, all these owners and GMs, they call you. Because we meet everybody. We meet him. Eric Bieniemy, he's a dynamic personality. Obviously he's been in the room with Andy Reid with the most creative of offenses. He's the offensive coordinator. Is he the play caller? No, but it's about play design. It's about play creation. It's about knowing the type of athlete you need to put together those side kind of creative offenses, right? And he's a great guy.
All right, so there you go. Chris Collinsworth, Seth, Eric Bieniemy, no hesitation. The part that's in there that I kind of like said, okay, is the part where he said, is he the play caller? No. And I'm like, well, I thought he was the play caller. I thought he was the guy who was calling plays for Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City.
Right. And I think that with him, the fact that they do meet with these guys, yeah. And I think Collinsworth, and especially when the way those production meetings go, for people that don't know, it's pretty casual. And usually the coaches, if they trust the broadcasters, are pretty open with what their plans are, what they know about the opponent, what they're going to do, because it helps the broadcaster call a better game. And there's a little bit of a tit for tat there where I think that, they want to gain the favor of a guy like Collinsworth who can go on with Peter King and talk about you. So I think the guys like Collinsworth, especially, who have been there forever and are huge names, they end up getting a pretty good feel for the actual personalities of guys and the actual coordinators and how much they're actually involved with the development of Patrick Mahomes or whomever else. But I mean, yes, at the end of the day, it's going to be a leap of faith. There's no way to separate Eric Bieniemy from Andy Reid. The same way when Andy Reid was interviewing for the Philadelphia Eagles job in the back way, back in the day, there was really no way to separate this former offensive line coach who had only been an offensive coordinator for a couple years. How do you separate him from Mike Holmgren? Because the Eagles originally wanted to hire Mike Holmgren. He ended up taking the job in Seattle. And they ended up kind of on a leap of faith going with Andy Reid. Andy Reid went on to go to four NFC championship games with Donovan McNabb. It's a pretty impressive run. So that's where you are. I think sometimes people will bring this up and act like, well, because you don't know if Eric Bieniemy is all that involved, or because Andy Reid is such a genius, then you can't hire Eric Bieniemy. No, I think you just have to accept that you don't know. And in the interview with Eric Bieniemy, and especially the interviews with others, people that have been around the Chiefs, people that know Andy Reid, get a feel for what people are saying about Eric Bieniemy. You know, away from the cameras, away from microphones, just how much of this in Kansas City was because of Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, logically, I agree with everything you just said about Collinsworth. I think what makes me nervous about what we just heard in you know, Collinsworth's scouting report, we'll call it, on Eric Bieniemy, was the part where he says that Bieniemy is not necessarily the play caller. That's a little concerning to me because I would like to know what some of his tendencies are. I do like that he's been in the room with Andy Reid and he's been a big part of the design of this offense and that this offense has been really good with him there. The part that scares me a little bit is kind of plays into one of the things we did last week, Seth. We played some audio from Bieniemy during his weekly press conference, and I was just bowled over by his enthusiasm, his charisma, his, you know, kind of some of the philosophies he was espousing about team and things like that. You know, he was doing the whole thing. It's not about numbers. It's about the two most important letters, the W and the L. And I'm watching this and I'm going, oh, yeah, this is the guy I want to run through a brick wall for. And then I have to take a step back. And maybe hearing Collinsworth say it makes me take a step back where he's talking about he's got great charisma. He's got great energy. He closes out the soundbite by saying he's a great guy. I don't want to get snowed over by a sales pitch. You know what I mean? Like, I like that he's got energy like that. And I like somebody who brings some positivity, especially considering the dark cloud that was let go at 0-4 a couple of weeks ago, that it's somebody who brings a different type of energy to the building. We hope, you know, maybe things change when you're a head coach as opposed to an OC and you got that target on your back. But I don't want his personality to be as big a component of the selection process as it was of Collinsworth's evaluation of him in that cut. You know what I mean? Half the cut was about his personality and what a great guy he is. That needs to be so far down on the list of reasons why you're hiring a guy, in my opinion.
Well, unless that is the stuff that, just like with Jimmy Johnson, it was Jimmy Johnson's force of personality that was really his best strength as a coach. He wasn't an X's and O's guy. And I think then it becomes, okay, how good is Eric Bieniemy at hiring a staff and what is his plan? That was another little tidbit I uncovered. I kind of got curious about Andy Reid and the hiring process when he went to Philadelphia. I guess Joe Banner, when he was interviewing or looking for candidates for the Philadelphia job, had asked for the coach who annoyed his players the most with his attention to detail, who was the most persnickety about detail to the point where it annoyed his players. And Andy Reid was one of those guys on that list. And he showed up with, now bear with me because you know I have a rule about showing up with a binder.
Yes.
Generally, I think it's a bad idea if you show up with like a 500-page
binder. Yeah, I'm very anxious
binder.
To see where this goes.
So usually I'll tell everybody like, hey, if you're giving a presentation, don't hand somebody a 400-page binder because they're not going to read it. This is the one exception. Andy Reid showed up with his mega binder with all the blueprint for how he was going to handle being a head coach. Now, that is actually important, and that's not as much for the owner to look at and say, like, oh, okay, this is how I do it. You really want to know, okay, does this guy have a plan for what happens the day he walks in that front door of the building and he's in charge of everything? There are so many decisions that people are coming at you with all the time that a lot of guys who even think they're prepared for it. You know, I was here with Gary Kubiak in his first year. Gary Kubiak was extremely prepared in terms of being ready with his persona, his knowledge of the game, all those things of being a head coach. But even he was caught off guard by the enormity of the job at times. I remember one day he was sitting up in front of the meeting and he started like Kubiak kind of started going off on this rant in the team meeting about how he was sick of getting these calls about where guys have been at 2 a.m. and all this. And I'm like, that's kind of the job, coach. You got to have a process for this. You got to have a screener that lets the calls through and lets you know what's interesting. Okay, yeah, if somebody's reporting that one of your receivers is in a nightclub at 3 a.m., guess what? You don't even have to really hear that report, but you got to have a system in place for filtering all that stuff out. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you want to be prepared for. Does Eric Bieniemy have a 400-page binder on how to be prepared as an NFL coach? I have one other theory about Eric Bieniemy, by the way.
Okay, okay.
And it's this. I think that He owes at least a nice fruit basket to Chris Berman if Eric Bieniemy gets this head coaching job. Because Eric Bieniemy, I think a lot of people would be shocked to realize that Eric Bieniemy did not have all that illustrious a career as an NFL running back. But because he had such an awesome Sleeping with Bieniemy nickname that Chris Berman would use any and every chance he got, I think a lot of people don't realize that over the course of 9 seasons, Eric Bieniemy ran for a total of 1,589 yards.
That's it?
That's it. He never had more than 381 yards in a season. Awesome on Tecmo Bowl.
He was awesome on Tecmo Bowl. He was your goal linebacker.
He was.
Tecmo Bowl. If you had asked me, true or false, Eric Bieniemy had a 1,000-yard season at some point during his 9 years in the NFL, I would have said true. Because, yeah, I think it's because of the – I think it's two things. It's the profile of his nickname, plus he was really, really good in college. He and I are the same age. They played Notre Dame in 2 Orange Bowls. Colorado did with Bieniemy there, and he was their feature back. He was really, really good at Colorado. He was an excellent college back.
I would say the best year he had was in Cincinnati, where he had 424 yards receiving and 43 receptions that year. So he got close to 1,000 all-purpose at least, because he had 381 yards. So he had about 800 yards of all-purpose yards. He had 381 yards rushing that year. But, yeah, he had a total of 11 rushing touchdowns in his career, 0 receiving touchdowns.
Wow.
He had an awesome nickname. And as you said, incredible college career and a national championship.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So Eric Bieniemy, the choice of Chris Collinsworth, and I think maybe the front runner right now for the job.
And by the way, that actually is a check plus in his favor in terms of being a coach. I love guys that were nondescript players.
Yes.
A lot of backup quarterbacks. Like, that's why Dan Orlovsky is so good on television. It's because he was a backup quarterback. He had to learn multiple schemes.
Yeah.
He had to work his ass off just to stay on the roster. Versus, you know, like a guy like Brett Favre, who didn't even learn what a nickel defense was until his 4th year in the NFL. Like, guys like Orlovsky can't afford to not know those things because they don't have the physical skills. So that, in terms of being a coach, yeah, I like that Bieniemy wasn't a perennial All-Pro.
Probably did a lot of scout team stuff when he was a player and things like that, where he had to
special teams
yeah, running down, kind of, you know, keeping that ego in check. All right, we are
Sean.
Yeah,
Sean. I'm sorry. Last thing. This is the most astounding stat. Over under on how many games do you think Eric Bieniemy started in his NFL career?
I'm going to guess it's a really low number. I'm going to say 4.
One. He started one game entire NFL career.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
God, you think he'd start like 10 by accident over 9 years? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, just
a
with
bunch
injuries
of injuries.
Or
yeah, yeah. All right. We're going to launch a new segment in the next segment here. The Texans are 1-6 right now. We understand that. This is a segment that's going to make you feel a little bit better about the life we're leading right now with the Texans being 1-6. It's called It Could Be Worse. That's next. Text message. Miss you guys. Relocated to Corpus Christi because of work, and I get your show every now and again, depending on the signal. Here's my recommendation. Download the radio.com app. That device that you're holding in your hand that you sent that text message, in all likelihood, has the ability to download apps, and you can stream us with the radio, and you can even rewind to the beginning of the show and listen from the beginning of the show. All right,
it's actually it's a superior way to listen. The sound quality is better.
Very good.
Our voices sound sexier, frankly.
So totally,
if that's the reason, I mean, the studies show that 17% of people who listen to the show listen specifically because it turns them on.
Yeah, the sexiest.
Listen on the radio.com app if you're one of those 17%.
Payne and Pendergast, the sexiest show in town, with you on a Tuesday morning. All right, Seth. So I like this idea. You sent me a couple stories yesterday, and these are stories of teams, of other NFL teams, sort of a reminder that, hey, the Texans are 1-6, but they're not alone in their ineptitude. And I would say that some of these stories represent a level of dysfunction that goes well beyond any sort of dysfunction. I don't think the Texans are dysfunctional. I just think they're not very good at football right now. But some of these stories actually, I think, are going to make Texan fans feel better. So we're going to call this segment, It Could Be Worse. Ben, do you have some mood music to play? Okay, good. Yeah, I like this. All right, so
what's the circuit? Oh, it's a Benny Hill. Okay.
Yeah. Yakety Sax, I believe, is the name of the tune. This first one here involves, big shock, the Cincinnati Bengals. Not sure if you saw this, but the Cincinnati Bengals defensive lineman Carlos Dunlap, who is one of their most tenured players. He's a former Pro Bowler. He's a good player. He may be trying to force his way out of town. He's been demoted from being a starter, and he did not handle it well. Last week, he hosted a really bizarre Instagram Live where he was going to address his demotion, but he just shouted out every teammate that joined the chat. You fast forward to Saturday, and he went on Instagram, and he posted a picture of the depth chart with a caption calling out him being third team on the depth chart. So he's putting up pictures of the depth chart on social media on Instagram. And then he got into a verbal altercation with his position coach on the sideline. There's video circulating of that. Nick Eason is his D-line coach. He got into it. He's arguing with him at the end of the loss to the Browns on Sunday. And then this is the coup de grace. He put up a tweet after the game saying, 6,000 square foot city view with huge balcony, 4-bedroom, 4.5-bath, one of the best school districts for sale. Do your market analysis. Make me an offer. Serious inquiries only with proof of funds. Owner is willing to sell, furnished or unfurnished. He basically put his house on the market after the game on Sunday, to which one of his teammates, Tyler Boyd, said, suck a bleep, Los, basically saying that's not cool. Now, Joe Mixon said, let me get that crib. Joe Mixon, who has a new contract, actually wants to buy. So
that's
one of the
nice,
longest
though,
tenured Bengals is putting his house on the market right now.
Carlos Dunlap, he might be going in a bit more of a vocal route. He has the benefit of social media now. He might have finally been broken by the Bengals the same way that Carson Palmer was broken by the Bengals. Remember, Carson Palmer said famously that he was going to either retire or go play somewhere else, to which the entire football universe said, yeah, I get it. I get it. That's understandable. I get it. I don't know if, I would think that Carlos Dunlap, who's been really a very, very good player on a bad team for a long time, should he have handled this differently or should he be handling it better? Sure. He hasn't been playing all that great this year, which is the reason that he finds himself so far down on the depth chart. Where do they have him? Was Christian Covington ahead of him on the depth chart?
That's a good question. Let me look at the story again.
Look at that napkin. Tell me which position specifically Carlos Dunlap is on that napkin depth chart.
I will tell you. I got to reopen the story here. I'm clicking on the link.
Covington, DJ Reader, for those of you that didn't realize, DJ Reader is on IR. He had a kind of a nasty injury. So that was one of the blows dealt to the Bengals.
Yeah, the internet's just taking it forever to load the reload the picture.
Well, regardless, Christian Covington is on that team. I think he's starting. So good job, Christian Covington. It's tough. It's tough being in a room when somebody's having drama like that, man. Because it just everything's. It's like Thanksgiving dinner all day long. You know, when you've got
awkward.
It's Thanksgiving dinner in an election year all day long.
in a house where there was a divorce and the divorce sides are both in the room with each other.
Yeah, and the woman's got her new husband with her too, and the guy thinks he's going to keep up by bringing his new girlfriend, but you realize real soon that this is just a street walking hooker that he picked up on the way to the dinner. Yeah,
awkward as
it's bad.
All right, so a reminder that Texan fans, you are 1-6, but it could be worse. You could be the Bengals. Seth, what is the next one here? Is the Falcons? There's this girly voiceover. For those who don't know, Todd Gurley accidentally, I guess I'll put with air quotes, scored a touchdown late in the game against the Lions, where he tried to hold up because
the Lions wanted to let him score so they would have a chance to otherwise the Falcons could have just run the clock down,
kicked a game winning field goal, and then that would have been that. And Todd Gurley, unfortunately for the Falcons, obliged, scored a touchdown. The Lions get the ball back, and you know the rest. They go down, score a touchdown, kick the extra point. They win the game. Is this a voiceover from a fan about Todd Gurley, Seth, that we're about to play?
No, this is a press conference where they show Todd Gurley, but it's a voiceover of this young comedian in Atlanta who's just a beaten down Atlanta fan. When you first see the video, it's Todd Gurley wearing a mask. And for the first 15 seconds, I thought it was actually Todd Gurley.
I did
actually,
too.
Until later in the, like about 45 seconds in, he drops an N-word. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I would have heard about this by this point.
Right, right.
This is the young comedian, young African-American, young black comedian doing this, by the way. But here you go.
Yeah, man, before we get started, man, I know y'all trying to blame the game on me. You know what I'm saying? I understand that. And look, first of all, I wasn't even trying to fall in the end zone. That momentum carried me. But let me say this, because the culture is so up in Atlanta. Y'all mad at me for scoring a touchdown. That's what it's coming down to right now. Y'all is upset at me because I scored a touchdown. I've never heard no such thing as the game losing touchdown. Y'all really upset at me because I put points on the board. Like, I came over to the sideline, was like, why did you score? I'm like, what kind of are you talking about? Why did y'all not want to? Like, I really thought I won us the game. And I know who else thought I won us the game. The mother defense, because they damn sure didn't come out after I scored the touchdown. I guess they were celebrating on the sideline or some because that last minute, they played 59 minutes. And then the last minute, them folks was like, nah, bro, I'm straight. And that's why, bro, I hate it here, bro. I hate I came.
Why you decided to go for it?
There you
it
go. That's good. So we get the gist.
That was the part about the part about the defense thinking that he won the game,
right?
Because they did. They went out there and they just
rolled
let
over.
The Lions just take it. The funniest part about that whole scenario too. Like, this was the most Lions. It was the most Falcons thing ever, and it was the most Lions thing ever. Was the Lions defender, like, jubilantly signaling the touchdown when Gurley went into the end zone. He was acting like he had scored a touchdown himself. He looked at the official and signaled touchdown.
He was right, though. They got the ball
back. I know he was right, but it's not like you don't celebrate it. It's one of those things where you feel like, oh, this feels dirty. Okay, all right, we got to let him score.
It's going to be one of the greatest posters of all time. Todd Gurley falling into the end zone with a Lions player with his hands up. If you don't have any context, it's hilarious looking.
You know what I've noticed is that this needs to be the strategy. If you're in a position as a defense where you've decided to let the offense score so that you have another chance to get the ball back. It is important to put up like half a fight. Because if Gurley knew he wasn't supposed to score, and if they had just opened up like a Red Sea, I think Gurley would have done the right thing and gone down. You could see at the end he was trying to go down.
He was.
But when all of a sudden you go back into like, oh, I got to fight my way towards the goal line mode, and that's what you have to do is kind of put up a little bit of a fight and then let him in at the end.
Yeah, fake fight. All right, last one here in our segment. It could be worse. We're reminding you, Texan fans, you could be the Falcons, you could be the Bengals, or you could be beleaguered Cowboys defensive coordinator Mike Nolan, who is probably the coordinator most likely to get fired here by the time the middle of the season. We're almost through the middle of the season right now. The Cowboys defense has been awful. Mike Nolan has been terrible coordinating that defense. He had his press conference yesterday, I believe, and as if the fiasco for the Cowboys defense wasn't bad enough, Mike Nolan had literally a hot sauce issue in the middle of his press conference.
He's been active every week, as far as, I think, disrupting the quarterback. He's escaped several times to do that. Obviously, the frustration for him as well is just, look, when he misses them, nobody – whoops, excuse me. I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh, never good. It's terrible. Jeez. I'm sorry.
That.
Hang on, guys. I'll be right back. Give me 1 second.
All right.
So that Mike Nolan forgetting that he had Tabasco on his fingers and touching his eyes is the most Mike Nolan thing of 2020 so far.
I remember when I did that when I was the first time I had hot wings when I was like 11 years old. Remember I did that and I learned my lesson. Maybe that was the first time Mike Nolan's ever had Tabasco sauce. I felt bad for Nolan because this is the kind of thing that if times were good and it was – if the team were doing well, this would be like the perfect, oh my gosh, they're real people just like us. How endearing that he got Tabasco sauce stuck in his eye. But now it's going to be just a sign of how incompetent and awful
right.
he is.
Now it's further proof as to why their defense is terrible that he got Tabasco in his eye. It was a headline yesterday. It was like the number 2 or 3 headline on ESPN.com.
Do you ever feel dumber than when you do that, though? That is every time I've ever done that in my life, you feel like the dumbest person alive.
Yep.
Like I was eating wings and I rubbed my eyes like a moron.
Crawfish, it happens a lot. With you don't realize how much the spices from crawfish seep into your fingers when you've been peeling them for 2 hours and drinking cold beer. All right, that was our new segment. It could be worse. So Texan fans, be reminded: you're not the Bengals, you're not the Falcons, you're not Mike Nolan. It's all good, man. It's all good. Now, it's not all good for David Johnson right now. If it keeps going like this, will David Johnson surpass these names? And let's just say it's not the Texans' all-time rushing list. We'll tell you what names next. All right, so on Sunday, the Texans did something that is really difficult to do in today's NFL. They recovered an onside kick.
3 yards back of the ball, doinks it forward, trying to chase it down himself. It's loose. A swarm Texas of deep steel blue jerseys on it. They say they have it. No official signal yet. Texans claim possession on the Green Bay side of the 50, and they continue to umpile, and they've got it. Texans recover the onside kick.
So they recover the onside kick. That was pretty cool. There was still, you know, a very minuscule chance that they could win the game. They would have had to recover a second onside kick to get an opportunity for another score. They were down 2 touchdowns at that point. But it was kind of fun recovering an onside kick and at least keeping a little mystery alive. Could they do this? Could they pull off this miraculous comeback? It only lasted one play, though, for that miracle to be squelched.
First down at the 47-yard line of the Packers. Watson in the gun. Here's the snap. Deshaun looking, and he throws it over the middle to David Johnson, who spins, and the ball's in the air. It's a fumble, and Amos picks it up.
Hi, Andre Ware's reaction there is still my favorite underrated point. Oh boy, that fumble! If you didn't see it, maybe you checked out on the game at that point. And who, I don't think anybody—not you, Seth, but you, the listeners out there—the ball careened sky high. It was every bit of a fumble, and the Packers recovered it, and then the game was over. They just took a couple knees, and that was it. But I think the reaction to that wasn't, oh my God, this is why they lost the game. I think the reaction, unfortunately, for David Johnson, Seth, was this is the most David Johnson ending to a game ever. David Johnson has been everything that skeptics of the DeAndre Hopkins trade said he would be when he got here, which is somebody who really doesn't give off a vibe that they're all that hepped up about playing football. He doesn't run like somebody who gets extreme joy in getting hit by other human beings right now.
I'm torn because this is one of those situations where I don't want to blame somebody for being who they are. This is who David Johnson has been for the last two seasons. I mean, anybody that went back and watched David Johnson run the last 2 years could tell you that this is what you were going to get if David Johnson didn't show up to Houston a different guy. And it was hard. It was hard in the offseason to hear people make excuses that, frankly, were based more on conjecture and easy narratives than actually watching David Johnson play. Like, he has not broken tackles for 3 years now, really, because 2016 was his last really good year. He didn't play much in one of those seasons from 17 through 19. But this is just who he's been. It's just the part that continues to shock me, Sean, is that even though I didn't like the DeAndre Hopkins trade, I felt like at least part of it was Bill O'Brien understanding that, all right, David Johnson is certainly not who we would have wanted to be our feature back, but this is the piece that they're giving us. We can use him alongside Duke Johnson, and it's not a perfect trade by any stretch of the imagination. But I never really thought that Bill O'Brien in any capacity would really think that David Johnson could be a bell cow back. And yet, there we were in the first part of the season with David Johnson getting more than 80% of the carries. He continues to. It feels like this was the plan all along. No, he's not. He's not. He has not been a good running back for four seasons. And I don't understand how O'Brien could have been that bad at judging talent like that. But I guess I got to go back to when he was adamant that Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer were good quarterbacks too.
Yeah, as it turns out, he's just not very good at evaluating talent. And unfortunately, that it's going to wind up being one of the most crucial tipping points in the history of the franchise, moving DeAndre Hopkins, getting David Johnson back. So it leads me to the question, especially seeing the reaction to that fumble. It got me thinking, Seth, oh boy, there's that list out there. And it really goes across all Houston teams, but we'll keep it specific to the Texans here. There's just that list, and if you spend enough time in town, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That list of athletes who are just going to be in the doghouse, and anytime their name is mentioned, maybe they can get out of that doghouse eventually, but at least, you know, with some guys that get out of the doghouse, they'll still remember those years that they were in it. But just that doghouse list of guys where you go, oh, yeah, remember that guy, remember this guy. These are the names, I think, that are on that. I want to run these by you, Seth. And actually, you brought up this one during the break. I think it's a good one if we want to go chronologically, I guess. is, and it's the same position as David Johnson, Amon Green. Anytime Amon Green, anytime his name gets brought up, people remember that he was brought in when Mike Sherman was part of the coaching staff here, early Gary Kubiak years, and he got what at the time was a lot of money for a 30-year-old running back. I think his signing bonus was like $8 or $10 million, which doesn't sound like a ton, except that at the time in 2007, for a guy who was injured and aging, that was a ton of money, and he barely got on the field as a Houston Texan for 2 years.
Yeah, I guess the big thing there is that David Johnson seems like a very solid citizen,
yeah,
where Amon Green has had some dalliances with some bad stuff.
Yeah.
So, Amon Green was almost like the double whammy. He was not productive on the field, and he didn't fit the mold of the kinds of guys that McNair wants to bring in, or the McNair family has typically wanted to bring in. Johnson, I honestly, this isn't me trying to be nice or anything. I have zero ill will towards David Johnson just because it's not his fault that the Texans put way more on him, like they expected way more of him and duped some fans into believing they should accept more on him than he actually has. Where the Amon Green, the fact that he got a new contract and the fact that it was Mike Sherman's guy that he brought in, and that he was somehow supposed to be some kind of a savior to teach you how to actually do it in the NFL, that annoyed me.
That's interesting you bring that up, the contract, because I think we're going to see a common trend here of these other names that I've kind of put down on the list. He wasn't in the doghouse for most of the time he was here, but by the time it ended for Matt Schaub, he was in the doghouse. And I think the pick sixes are probably the big reason. But I think the secondary reason to that, Seth, is he signed a huge contract extension the year before where this was not supposed to happen. Like, you're getting paid big money to keep that offense rolling that they finally got rolling in 2009 and 2010 and 2011. And when he fell off a cliff and took the entire team with him.
I think for Schaub, it was more how spectacular the fall was, and the fact that it wasn't just interceptions, it was pick sixes. It was that ridiculous stretch of pick sixes he went on, coupled with the fact that the preseason expectations were so high with that team. So I don't think the preseason expectations with this team right now were not nearly what they were going into that 2013 season. So that was such a buildup followed by such a dramatic fall that I don't know if it'll ever be. I don't think that you could surpass the level of hostility people had for Matt Schaub at any point. I think that might be the upper limit. Maybe somebody else will equal it at some point, but that was pretty extreme. I still feel bad for Matt Schaub to this day because I feel like Matt Schaub just lost it. There was something that he lost in his ability to throw the football. And it wasn't like he wasn't trying. It wasn't like he wasn't putting in the work. He just wasn't a good football player anymore.
And yet he still continues to pull a paycheck from an NFL team. It's remarkable.
He's the perfect backup quarterback. And he actually looked all right when he went in as a starter for one game last year.
He did throw for over 400 yards. I don't think they won, but he threw for over 400 yards. Same year, 2013, Ed Reed.
Yeah, that's a – wait, I take it all back. Yeah, it doesn't get any worse than Ed Reed. Ed Reed is the – Ed Reed because he came in and was hailed as the savior. Like, that he was specifically the guy that was going to teach the Texans how it was going to be and ended up being almost the exact opposite in every respect. Just – it was never a good match. It was ill-fated from the beginning, including the way it was executed. I mean – depending on who you want to believe, Wade Phillips may not have even been consulted, or at least his opinion didn't matter when they brought Ed Reed in. It was a scheme mismatch. Ed Reed ends up selling out Wade Phillips midway through the season. There is that one hero that stole $50,000 out of the front seat of Ed Reed's car. That guy's out there somewhere.
Right.
Someday, he's going to be like the guy that killed Bin Laden. He's going to show it. Like, even though he's not supposed to talk, he's going to talk.
He's gonna
and we'll be able to give him the credit.
On Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Hey, you know who's making the rounds on Radio Row? The guy who stole Ed Reed's $50,000. You guys want to get him on the show? Because we did get the guy who shot Bin Laden on the show back in 2015. That was pretty badass. His name's Rob O'Neill. It was pretty cool. All right, so Ed Reed, 2013. I think the other thing with Ed Reed, Seth, that doesn't get pointed out enough is not only did you sign Ed Reed, but the opportunity cost. You let Glover Quinn go because you signed Ed Reed, and Glover Quinn went on to become a Pro Bowler, a perennial Pro Bowler in Detroit, he was a really good – he was the kind of guy you want to keep and get on a second contract.
Yeah. Glover Kinn was like the ultimate dude on your team. He was a great teammate. He's a competitive player. Could have had him at a reasonable contract. Yeah, that was a – boy, that was a two-player swing right there. That was bad.
Here we go, Seth. Brock Osweiler. Does David Johnson ever approach the level of hostility of Brock Osweiler in 2016?
I can't believe I set the ceiling at Matt Schaub, and then we went right into Ed Reed, who surpassed that ceiling, and then Brock Osweiler, who, again, if Osweiler would have just been Osweiler, I would have been generally okay with Brock Osweiler sucking. I would have said, all right, you know what, man? It's not his fault that he is who he is. He made the most of playing in a Gary Kubiak system where Kubiak made him look a lot better than he was, and Bill O'Brien got burned, and Rick Smith got burned on him. So be it. But, yeah, there was something about Brock and his infuriatingly slow way of explaining the simplest things in his press conferences. It was his little way he had of almost acting like trying to emulate Tom Brady isn't what he's all about, bro. All of those things by the time he was done here, it was so annoying that he surpassed the Matt Schaub line as well.
I think the two things that are going to really hurt David Johnson on a list like this, I don't think he's approached the level of fan hostility that Schaub or Reed or Osweiler have gotten over the last few years. But if he does continue to approach that, I think it's going to be two things that, as you pointed out, Seth, that are not necessarily his fault. I think one of them is they're not using him the way that it was advertised he would be used, which is throwing him the football. I think if they gave him 5 or 6 touches in the pass game, fans might feel a lot differently about him than they feel about them running him 15 times in between the tackles right now. That's number one. Number two is with every 10 catch, 120-yard, 2-touchdown game that DeAndre Hopkins has, David Johnson's name is going to get brought up by everybody, not just Texan fans, but national media. DeAndre Hopkins is leading the league in catches and yards receiving. And he makes, like he did here, at least 1 or 2 plays every game that wind up on some highlight reel or some commercial or some sort of montage. You know, that's going to hurt David Johnson as well.
You know, it's interesting. DeAndre Hopkins, when I watch Cardinals games, the thing that jumps out at me immediately is, my gosh, DeAndre Hopkins has so much room to run after he catches the ball, which is something that had stopped happening with the Texans. And it's hard not to blame the offensive play calling when you see the guy who is so blanketed with attention all the time here in Houston. And that includes when he had Will Fuller to offset things for him a little bit. That now he has all this room to run. Now, one thing that the Cardinals are doing is that they are getting the ball to him quicker and faster and on shorter routes. So he's got more room to run afterwards, partly because they're just getting it out of it. They're getting it out of Kyler Murray's hands. They're spreading it out. They're doing a lot of things to better utilize DeAndre Hopkins. It's hard not to judge Bill O'Brien retroactively harshly for that.
Did you see his touchdown in the game on Sunday by any chance, Seth? Did you see DeAndre Hopkins' touchdown in the game? It was a 30.
Yes.
I mean, it was one of those catches where my take on Hopkins getting traded, I hated the trade like everybody else did, but in going back and rewatching some of the Texans games from last season and seeing how not only how integral Hopkins was in the offense, but watching and going, there's nobody on this team that can make that catch. And saying that to myself 3 or 4 times every game, like, who makes that catch on this team? I mean, Fuller and Cooks and Cobb are nice receiver. Who makes that? Who in the NFL makes that play? And that touchdown in that game against Seattle on Sunday night was one of those touchdowns. The dude spins, turns, catches, keeps both feet in bounds, and somehow finds a way to get his knee to hit the pylon and get a touchdown. It was just an absurd DeAndre Hopkins 37-yard touchdown catch. So
there's by way of kind of just fully illustrating what the different experience would be right now.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this or not, but DeAndre Hopkins, at the very least, it was during a Trump train procession on Sunday.
Yeah.
He I don't know. There's various reports. Some people are claiming he was weaving in and out of it. Other people are saying he just flipped the double birds to the Trump train or something. I don't know exactly what was happening. Frankly, I'm just glad that we don't have to talk about it on our sports radio show right now and dice it out about all of this stuff. That's the one. I have zero clue what was actually happening or anything.
You are talking
and
about
frankly,
it right
I'm
now.
I'm glad that I don't. Yeah, but not to the same degree that if it was like happening on I-45 or
right.
something,
Fair
and
enough.
we'd have angry callers on both sides right. and everything. And I can keep that at an arm's length for the moment.
That's true. That is true. All right, let's get to some headlines here.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Romeo Crennel met with the media yesterday and talked about a lot of things. Talked the trade deadline, talked J.J. Watt. Said, bottom line, as far as the product goes on the field, the Texans need to be more consistent.
Well, I think we need to be more consistent. Sometimes you see guys, they make really good plays, and then other times guys, they make plays that are not so good. And what I would like to see is I would like to see this team become a more consistent team down in and down out and be able to play it throughout the game on a consistent level.
Seth, I heard that answer yesterday when I was listening to the press conference, and I'm thinking to myself, I know Romeo can't say this. My feeling is, no, you need better players is what you need, really. But when he's talking about that, I'm thinking, like, even the really bad team, and the Texans are a bad team right now, the really bad teams, like the worst teams that we see week in, week out, year in, year out. Yeah, it's the NFL. They all make some good plays during the game. They just make too many bad plays during the game. Like that's yeah. Like we get it that you've got that club in your bag that you can make those plays, but that's the problem with bad players. They can't do those things on a frequent basis. You've got bad players.
You know who the sneaky most important player is on this roster right now?
Who?
And the guy that's making it feel way, way, way worse? Garyon Conley. Because Bradley Roby, when his knee got banged up, that was it. There was nobody else left there that had a prayer, not just versus Davante Adams, but really like versus tight ends or anybody. There was nobody left that could play man coverage between Vernon Hargraves, Philip Gaines, Kean Crossen, Lonnie Johnson's playing safety now anyway. Like there was nobody, Eric Murray. There's nobody out there that you could feel comfortable in man coverage. Garyon Conley, look, he's not a perfect player, but he's got value as a coverage guy, and they are just so depleted right now. And with Roby with multiple injuries too, it's there's only so much you can do when you can't cover it all on the back end.
Yeah, it was, and I think the frustrating thing about Sunday, Seth, like there was no secret where the Packers were going with the football. Hey, Aaron Rodgers threw 34 passes, 17 of those targets were to Davante Adams. Like half, one out of every two times he dropped back to throw the football, he was throwing it to Davante Adams. Like there was no subterfuge, there was no trickery, there was nothing. It was Davante Adams is going to run right past whoever's on him. Aaron Rodgers is going to stare him down and throw the football to him. That's it. I think that was the most frustrating thing. Next headline, Monday Night Football. The Rams move to 5-2 on the season. The Bears fall to 5-2 on the season as the Rams beat the Bears in Los Angeles last night 24-10. Seth, in a game where the Bears defense scored more points than the Bears offense. The Bears offense generated 3 points. The Bears defense got a fumble six late in the game to make it 24-10. Nick Foles is terrible. Nick Foles, if he's not wearing a Philadelphia Eagles uniform, is absurdly bad, and I don't know when NFL teams are going to start to realize this. Jacksonville gave him a ton of money. The Bears are paying him a lot of money, traded actual draft assets to get him. The team that was across the field from the Bears last night, Foles was a backup on the Rams at one point. He was on the Chiefs. If he ain't wearing an Eagles uniform, Seth, Nick Foles stinks at football. Period. End of subject.
I don't. I think that he's incredibly inconsistent. I don't agree with that. I don't think he should be treated that harshly. The problem is, he's nowhere near the guy that he was for that short stretch on that Super Bowl run. And he's certainly not the guy You're right. He shouldn't be a starting. He shouldn't be looked at as a guy who's your go-to starting quarterback. Yeah. The hardest thing that I have watching him is just how labored it always looks in him getting rid of the ball. Like him, just it looks like he has to take every bit of energy he has to throw it versus like the nice easy release that some guys have. The other side of the ball is what I was interested in watching last night, which is the Rams. And when I watch the Rams, the biggest thing that I wish the Texans would take from it is their ability to be so crisp and so authoritative and so fast that even when they're not playing up-tempo, they're playing with better tempo than the Texans. By that, I mean there are times where they just flat out break the huddle, get up to the line, and run the damn play. And it's just such a joy to watch when it looks like the offense actually knows what the hell it's doing versus sitting back and diagnosing for 20 seconds and checking protection seven times. Like, sometimes just get up and run the damn play, whether you're an up-tempo or not. It's just something that the Texans, you don't even have to know what you're watching to understand how much more competent the Rams are at executing their offense than the Texans are right now. We just need more of that. For the love of everything good in this world, can I get somebody kind of like Sean McVay to run the next Texans?
Ooh,
offense?
Yeah, got me excited with that one. Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. Next headline: Odell Beckham Jr. left the Browns' win over the Bengals on Sunday with an apparent leg injury. It was confirmed yesterday. Odell Beckham Jr., Seth, out for the season. Torn ACL, looks like a 6 to 8 month rehab before he's going to get back on the field. Here's the thing about Odell Beckham Jr., and I know he had a big game a couple of weeks ago where they finally got him involved in the offense, both running the football. He scored on a reverse. He scored on a pass from Jarvis Landry. Like, Stefanski was emptying the chamber on some trickeration involving Odell Beckham Jr. I think the thing that gets lost with Odell Beckham Jr. is that it's been a long time since he's played at the level that I think people feel Odell Beckham Jr. is at. Even before this ACL injury, he's 2 or 3 years removed from being the player that we all think of when he made that crazy catch his rookie year against the Cowboys. I know he's getting paid like a player that's supposed to be at that level. An ACL injury is not going to help when it comes to Odell Beckham Jr. trying to recapture that magic from two or three years ago. It's been a very star-crossed last couple, 2-3 years for Odell Beckham Jr. What impact do you think this has? How big an impact do you think this has on the Browns, who were 5-2 on the season with their two losses being blowouts to really good teams?
Well, I think the biggest problem the Browns have had offensively has been with Baker Mayfield, you know, and he's another one. Hey, regardless of the game that he just had, he looked lost for a few weeks there. Like, he looked like he didn't even know where he was supposed to be making his reads. Sometimes that happens when you're absorbing a new system, when you're trying to, and we've seen this with, you know, various other really good offensive coordinators. Kyle Shanahan, it took a little while for him to get Matt Ryan going before they ended up having a record-breaking offense. So I think he'll obviously miss Odell Beckham Jr. for the rest of the season. But I do think that the Browns' offense can continue to improve as long as Baker Mayfield starts to absorb that system and execute that system better. So it's not like despite their record, I don't think anybody is really taking the Browns seriously as a genuine contender this year. But I think they making the playoffs would be a huge step forward for the Browns, and I think they have a chance to do that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And we'll get to see the Browns in a couple of weeks. They are the second game out of the chute for the Houston Texans after the bye week. It's the bye week this week, Jacksonville in Jacksonville next week, and then they travel to Cleveland after that. So we'll get a up close. And look, as much as I sit here and bang on Odell Beckham Jr., and I don't wish injury on anybody, but as someone who's rooting for the Texans to win football games, I feel better about beating the Browns if Odell Beckham Jr. is not on the field, for sure. Next headline, sticking with the NFL, it was a bad Sunday for Cam Newton. The Patriots lost 33-6 to the San Francisco 49ers, quarterbacked by former Patriot Jimmy Garoppolo, and Cam Newton is approaching this week as they prepare for their next game, as if his job is in jeopardy after he was pulled early in the fourth quarter of the Patriots' loss to the 49ers. Newton was on our sister station up in Boston, WEEI, on Monday, and he said, quote, "The first thing I said to myself coming home was, you keep playing games like that, bro, and it's going to be a permanent change. You don't need to tell me that for me to understand that. I get it loud and clear." it's really, you know, hearing, reading words like that from Cam Newton. If in a weird way, Seth, it's kind of refreshing a little bit that Cam Newton, that's humility that I don't think is often necessarily associated, maybe unfairly, but I don't think is often associated with Cam Newton, that he's got this degree of self-awareness that his job is on the line. Probably a lot of respect for Bill Belichick in those words too, I think.
Yeah, well, and probably one of the I think one of the most telling things that he said in a positive way was, quote, "I don't fear my position stability more so than controlling the locker room. Performances like yesterday jeopardize that. It's like, oh my God, players talk and that's what's important to me. Knowing you have your coach's belief is good, but my belief is that I want to have the whole facility. It doesn't start with a miraculous play. It's a whole body of work." And basically, he took a whole lot of accountability for the fact that he just flat out hasn't been playing well. He's another guy that's, you know, even though they've worked his abilities into the system, he's still in a new place. And frankly, working with the same bad receivers, and Julian Edelman's on that list because he's banged up. You know, he's not bad, but he's banged up. He's not himself. He's old now. People don't realize how old Julian Edelman is. And he's working with the same depleted crew of receivers that Tom Brady made the best with last year. You know, Tom Brady, it feels more and more like it was less about any kind of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick being sick of each other than it was Tom Brady realizing, man, I got to get off this sinking ship because I don't have anybody to work with here. I don't have any offensive talent. The Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, is retiring. I got to get the hell out of here. And Brady made the right move, by the way.
They should retroactively give Tom Brady votes for last year's MVP. You know what I mean? Like, you're starting to realize that, you know, they were a 3 seed, so they weren't a great team. They lost to the Dolphins in Week 17. Otherwise, they would have had a bye in the first round. But that team managed to win double-digit games, and that now they're 2-4, and they sinking ship is the perfect way to put it, Seth. This is a team that is sliding into the abyss right now, and that's with a healthy Cam Newton. Are we sure that he's still not suffering some of the effects of the coronavirus? How do we know? He had the COVID, you know.
I don't think he was ever symptomatic, was he?
I don't know, but maybe the symptoms are that he stinks at football now. Could be a symptom.
I don't think he looked all that. Like, I think that he did some Cam Newton things beforehand, but I don't think he looked all that incredible beforehand. And there was a little bit of the, hey, unleashing something that people hadn't seen yet. There's no film on him early in the season. I wonder if the team might be feeling some of the effects of it, but really, I mean, realistically, you look at it, and I don't care how good a coach Bill Belichick is, he's got his hands tied with this roster that he has right now. They lost half of their good defensive players in the offseason. They didn't improve much on offense, and the only thing they really have going for him, a lot of respects, is the potential of Cam Newton coming around. I think Jarrett Stidham starts, and I feel bad for Jarrett Stidham just because I don't think he's going to have all that ripe of a proving grounds because he's working with the same receivers that Cam Newton and Tom Brady were working with.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you're a young quarterback. That's the way it goes. Not everybody can wind up on the Patriots in their prime, I suppose.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.